Now it's time for the Art Journal Show. My name is Cora Zon, and in the studio I have very special guests, Jan Cochran-Harry and Ted Seckham. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
Very well, thank you. So it's very exciting. There is a new exhibition at Yalva called Vessels, and we're going to be talking about that, and also about the Margaret Lawrence Ceramics Collection, and also more about Yalva itself. So I can't wait to hear all about it and share this with people across the Yarra Valley. So Jan, tell us a little bit about the exhibition Vessels. It's currently on.
It is. Well, it's a beautiful exhibition, and it's a very special one. It's ceramics. I think it is the sixth exhibition that's been on at Yarra since it opened in May. And it comprises 25 pieces from the Margaret Lawrence Australian Ceramics Collection, which is a part of the foundation that I'm a trustee of, but also, importantly, for local Yarra Valley ceramicists. It looks stunning, the gallery, as it always does, but there's something special about and different about ceramics. It's open for people to come and visit and really see the historic collection of the Margaret Lawrence collection, Bequest, and then also to obviously see and available for purchase from the local artists, which is part of what Yarra is all about.
It is actually a very important part about what Yarra does to bring together the Yarra Valley artists and also combine it with another artist from outside of the valley.
That's
or
right.
Artists. That's part of the program, isn't it?
It is indeed. And I guess the core objectives of Yarra Arts and the gallery are really to support local artists, and we do that by showcasing and bringing together high-profile other artists, also build audiences, bring people to the valley, and to sort of educate and inspire people. Having an important impact in the early days. I think people are pretty happy with the way it's going.
It is fantastic. It is so fantastic, and you are instrumental in bringing this about, aren't you, Jan?
Well, yes, in a way, but only because I, as a trustee of the Bequest, unbeknownst to the Yarra Valley Arts people at the time, when there was this time last year, in fact, October last year, there was a strategic planning session done, and they asked me to help facilitate that because of my corporate background, not because they knew I was a trustee of a foundation that actually funds the arts and education and community development. But what came out of the people in that session and their vision for the artists in the Yarra Valley to have a home, to become more prominent, to help create the arts in the Yarra Valley to become as important as food and wine and as well known. And so that actually ticked all the boxes for the foundation that I manage. And so 2 or 3 months later, it just came about that there was a place and a space, and it ticked all those boxes. And also, before that, in August last year, I actually met Ted Seckham for the first time. Went to his studio at Open Studios, and I talked to him about the Margaret Lawrence Ceramics Collection and himself and his work, which is obviously internationally high profile. And in fact, in Margaret's 600-piece ceramics collection, there are some pieces of Ted's, as long with many others. But I wanted to be able to, and over the years since we've set the foundation up, which was in 2001, and Margaret passed away in 2005, the beginning of 2005, most of the collection has been in storage and in the archives with the University of Melbourne. We've been able to have it out on a few occasions in Melbourne, in a couple of places, and in Shepparton. But I wanted to be able to have an exhibition in the Yarra Valley. And I asked Ted, I just said to Ted, would you be interested if we can find a space sometime next year to have a joint collection? He readily agreed.
So that
was all well before Yarra Valley Arts put forward their vision. And so it's all come to be.
That's fantastic. How great is that? And it's now currently exhibiting at Yarra. You must tell people where Yarra is.
So Yarra is at 252 Maroondra Highway in Healesville, just the centre of Healesville, in the main street, right at the pedestrian crossing upstairs where the balcony is. And it's not just a gallery, it's an arts hub, and so there are workshops and performances and all sorts of arts. But the gallery will exhibit art that is paintings and sculpture, and in this occasion ceramics, and it'll have, you know, it has an annual and a turning over every month, different exhibition.
There's so many exhibitions, and it's open on Wednesday to Sunday from 11 a.m. till
5 p.m.
Free to go and have a look. It's actually good therapy to wander amongst art and enjoy it. And Ted, you've got some pieces in this exhibition.
I have, yes. I've got some crystal, what they call crystal glaze pieces. So it's something I've been working with probably for 35 years maybe, but it's an ongoing study, evolution of work. So I'm always looking for something new, and the latest incarnation is a lot of luster surfaces on crystal glazes. So I use precious metals within the glaze matrix itself. So if they're fired, they go through a normal glaze firing, high fire to 1300 centigrade, cooled to temperatures between 1050 and 1100. The crystals are ground, and then they're cooled, and then I have a look at them when they come from the kiln and make a decision based on where else they might like to go. Sometimes I'll acid etch them to produce different surfaces. Sometimes I'll, what they call, reduce them, which is a technique that used to be used in the Middle East, where they smoke the pots to bring out other effects. So I put precious metals like silver, sometimes small amounts of gold if it's available into the glazes, and I smoke the kiln and I make those. Then I turn a pot that's just a shiny pot into a pot that's covered with luster and different colours.
Wow.
They're absolutely stunning.
They are stunning. Yeah. Must go and have a look at them. You're listening to Yarra Valley FM 99.1. My name is Cora Zon. This is the Art Journal Show, and in the studio, my very special guests are Jan Cochran Harry and Ted Seckham. Jan, tell us a bit more about Margaret Lawrence.
Okay, well, Margaret Lawrence was an absolutely fascinating and amazing woman in so many ways. And she was my friend. I was her trustee and her friend for the last 6 years of her life before she passed away at the age of 90 in 2005. So she was very, very smart. She was she was born in Victoria. She went to school. She was the Dux of Presbyterian Ladies College, PLC, in Melbourne, year 12 matriculation in those days. And then in 1931, she went to the University of Melbourne and did a double degree in arts history and philosophy. She then worked as a journalist in New York, actually, for a very short time before the war. And she came back during the war years and actually worked for the government in Sydney, in what is, I think, the equivalent of ASIO at the moment, where they were decoding all sorts of things for the war. And then her father died in 1952, and she inherited quite a fortune. She was very modest, very quiet, very private, but really lovely, and one-on-one quite funny and enjoyable. She never married, never had any children, and nobody knew that she would have had two pennies to rub together. She was frugal. She lived in a very small flat in St Kilda, and one of her passions, big passion, was ceramics and the collection of ceramics, and the other passion was Carlton Football Club, and which she was a member since the 1931 and never missed. But ceramics was really her love, and she collected over 600 pieces that she left, as well as a fortune in a philanthropic foundation, which Perpetual Trustees continues to manage, and I'm a co-trustee with them, and we distribute funds to various organisations that are involved in arts, education and community development. But Margaret, and she also won, she was a quizmaster, and she was a polymath, really. She knew a lot about everything, and absolutely fascinating woman. And it's a privilege to continue to represent her. And I know that she would be absolutely thrilled with what's happening with lots of her, lots of the gifts we give around Victoria. But this one in the Yarra Valley, with Yarra Valley Arts and and Yarva Gallery and what's happening and the sort of support that the community are giving. So community development was really important. Arts is important and education's important. She'd be happy, I think.
So happy that she'd be happy, and it's so important to honour her and what she's done, what she's doing, she's continuing to doing after.
Yeah.
Afterwards.
And it will continue forever, really, in terms of the foundation continues to give every year.
Fantastic. Now, what's exciting is from her big collection of ceramics, 25 of them are on display at Yarva at the moment, and these 25 vessels, pieces, were selected by the two of you and somebody else?
And Andrew Chu, who's the gallery director at Yarva.
So yeah. Tell us what went into the
and
process
and
of
Ted is
choosing.
The expert here.
What went into the process? Well, when we started looking at the collection in its entirety, Andrew and I did initially, and then Jan came in and ably helped us at the end, which is wonderful.
Where is this collection? Where is the collection held at the moment?
It's held by the University of Melbourne Ian Potter Museum.
So you had to go down there?
No, the catalogue.
No, the exhibition is fully catalogued,
okay.
So we select from the catalogue, and I was very familiar with a lot of the works through this thing, but once we started to look as this collection rolled out in front of us, looking through the catalogue, we realised that we could only select a portion because it is so vast. So there are many other exhibitions to come from this magnificent collection. So it was about selecting works that were diverse and that were interesting. And I think we've succeeded in doing that. And we've got work from some very, very fine Australian ceramists, some who are deceased and some who are still actively working and are quite old. So some of the pieces represented are people like Alan Peascod, who was one of the infant terribles of Australian ceramics. He was a very interesting, very bloody mind and wonderfully creative person who was always coming up against the academia within the bureaucracy that controlled the academic world within universities.
Is that the one with the cheeky piece of like a caricature?
Yes, that's right. The caricature is the sculpture that's of Alan Peascod in this show actually represents one of the institutional managers of the university, and it's his take on that person, trying to trivialise him as an offer in the education area.
Yeah. Very cheeky. Mm. The pieces by the Boyd family, tell us a bit about those.
Really interesting works. Merrick Boyd, is known as the forefather of Australian ceramics, but there's a work of his from the 1920s. And then his three sons, Guy Boyd, David Boyd and Arthur Boyd, all of whom had early efforts of producing ceramic works, and you see in the style of the works what came from those works. Arthur Boyd became one of Australia's and to date most important artists, and David Boyd a lesser artist but certainly a significant artist in his own right, and Guy Boyd became a sculptor. And these are works from the time at Murrumbeena that were sort of blossomings of careers that would come later on.
Jan, do you know much about the way, the process that she would collect?
I know a lot about it, possibly not as much as Ted. I learnt recently that she actually haggled quite a bit with some of the artists.
She certainly did.
She was absolutely gorgeous. She would go to different exhibitions. And the first piece that she bought in 1945, which was actually a Merrick Boyd piece, 1921, she bought from a downstairs under the Melbourne Town Hall. They had an exhibition there, and that really sort of started her off. But she would also visit particular galleries in Melbourne that focused on ceramics, and she'd go to different shows. She would often buy small pieces that would fit in her handbag to get home on the tram. She also has a lot of large pieces as well, but she was a real collector. And, you know, if people who saw her long green wool coat and her brown hat and getting on the tram, you wouldn't think she had two pennies to rub together. And she didn't spend, I mean, she had all that money, but she really didn't spend much. And she loved the fact that these were beautiful artworks and pieces that she could purchase for a really, you know, very good price. And her little flat, actually, one-bedroom flat in Chapel Street, St Kilda, I mean, she'd lived in a couple of other places in St Kilda during the course of her life, but certainly the last 20 or 30 years she was in a little flat in Chapel Street. Almost every inch of that flat was specially, had shelving in it, and she had ceramics everywhere, even in the bathroom, in the toilet. And there's a story about that for a short period of time she had to put one of them in the oven. But she also had other, you know, beautiful paintings, but she then preferred, and books, beautiful books from all over the world, on art, but she preferred the ceramics and the, not really an obsession, I suppose it was an obsession in a sense, but her collector in her purchased a lot in the last, you know, 10, 15 years of her life, and she wanted to support the local artists, but she also wanted to just enjoy them all.
Just feel a bit of joy. Yeah. I think that support and joy come together, actually, when you purchase something from an artist.
It was interesting from the gallery perspectives, because I knew some of the galleries that from which she used to collect and buy work, and they were never, ever quite sure about what she was about, because she would have pots on lay-by and she would pay them off over months and months and months. So they always had this idea that she was person of fairly humble means, but she could certainly go and walk and buy any of those pieces she wanted at any time. she never showed her hand in that way.
I wonder why.
Humility, I think.
Yeah. She was, she was a child of the Depression in a sense. She was both competitive and sort of joyous and sort of quite community-minded in terms of support. She was generous. She always gave money to charity every year quietly. She was very private. I don't know. I mean, she didn't feel that the money was hers in some sense from her father's collection, from her father's inheritance. And she just had a sense of being humble person, but incredibly intelligent. She listened to the news all of the time. She knew everything that was going on around the world and in the country.
She sounds like quite a character. Yeah. And one of the songs that you've chosen for her is I Am Woman. Tell us a bit about why you've chosen that for her.
Okay, so she had a quiet glee with me in our private conversations, and glee is what I would call it, about the fact that she was able to beat all of the men on the quiz shows. And she was particularly good, she's good at everything, but unusually for a woman, she was good at sports questions. And often the men would, you know, so Barry Jones and others of them. So she loved the fact that she won the moneymakers and she beat men. But also more than that, briefly, she was fascinated with the job that I had as a senior woman in a corporate environment in the year 2000, and she used to ask me lots about what it's like and, you know, how you work. And originally, I think, you know, she was a journalist in New York, but she felt, I think, through me what she enjoyed was just that fact that women were doing well and in a sense could do anything. And of course she could have done anything, but, you know, she chose a quiet life. She never married, never had any children, and but I think certainly she used to talk to me about continuing to be strong and being, you know, we are women. And I think Helen Reddy at that time was, you know, was a good song, so that's in her memory as well.
I am woman, hear me roar. numbers too big to ignore, and I know too much to go back and pretend. 'Cause I've heard it all before, and I've been down there on the floor. No one's ever gonna keep me down again. Whoa, yes, I'm wise, but it's wisdom for the pain. Yes, I paid the price, but look how much I gained. If I have to, I can do anything. I am strong,
strong.
I am invincible,
invincible.
I am woman. You can bend but never break me, 'cause it only serves to make me more determined to achieve my stronger, not a novice any longer, 'cause you deepen the conviction in my soul. Oh yes, I'm wise, but it's wisdom for the pain. Yes, I pay the price, but look how much I gained. If I have to, I can do anything. I am strong,
strong.
I am invincible.
Listening to Yarra Valley FM 99.1. This is the Art Journal Show, and my very special guests are Jan Cochran, Harry, and Ted Seckham. Ted, could you tell us a little bit about the importance of the Margaret Lawrence collection?
Well, the most important thing is that it actually exists and it's there. It's there for future generations. We've harvested a small portion of that for this exhibition at Yarra, and if you walk around that collection, you'll just see how special those works are and how they'll resonate with nearly everybody, because they're fine examples of really great artists. What we're seeing in Australia now, and I'm seeing it more and more, is that collections are being broken up, and there are some very, very important collections at the moment that are going through the auction houses in Sydney and Melbourne. And they're collections that have been put together from a very educated eye by the collector, and with a lot of money gone into the collection over a whole generation. Suddenly when this person passes, then these things are broken up, so, and then they just disappear forever. We don't know where most of this work ends up, so I think it's really, really important that we have some respect for these collections within the community as well.
So how could families who have a collection, how could they go about thinking differently about what to do with that collection?
Well, I mean, people set up foundations, really, either as a bequest in their will, or they set them up now, can set them up during their life and enjoy the distribution, you know, and the exposure of them. In terms of collections like this, Again, it's people can put their wishes in a will, and they can gift them to an organisation that will look after them and keep them. In the case, as I said, of Margaret Lawrence, it's the University of Melbourne, Ian Potter. It was originally the Victorian College of the Arts, which became a part of the University of Melbourne. But there are other organisations.
Can I ask you first, why why were they sent to those places? I mean, you know, where else could they go to? I mean,
well, you have to explore. You know, when you're a family or you're an individual who has collections, it's important to explore during your life with the potential people or organisation to see whether, in fact, they will accept them. Because it's not always easy for organisations to accept them, so they need to understand what the collection is beforehand, how it would fit in with their, you know, with their objectives and the like. But galleries and so it depends on what the speciality is in the arts.
Well, tell us a bit about the Margaret Lawrence collection. Well, give that as an example.
Okay, so what happened was she and I visited a number of organisations. We went to the Shepparton Art Gallery, we went to numbers of others, we went to the VCA.
So you had a few excursions.
We had some great excursions, yeah. We went down to the mansion at Werribee, and we talked to the Ian Potter Museum, we talked to the VCA.
That would have been fun in itself.
It was, I don't know, and she loved that. It was like she told me that was it was a joy in her life. She really, the last 4 years and her involvement with actually thinking about what's going to happen now with things and being able to support. So she gave some gifts out of the first part of the foundation that we set up in 2001, and she got great joy out of that, and that gave me great joy because, you know, she was just amazing.
Did she ask you about this or did you put this to her?
Well, we talked about it together because when I met her, she already had in her will that she was going to distribute the fortune to charities, a range of charities, but pretty unspecified, and she hadn't really focused on what her interests were. So we talked about the importance of people thinking about the future and reflecting their real interests in life. And so new foundations came into existence in 2001. So her foundation was one of the first 10 in Australia, set up under some new legislation that you can set up during your life. And so I exposed her to the knowledge about what was possible and then took her around. And then finally we went to the National Gallery of Australia to a talk one night on the Felton bequest. And so Alfred Felton had set up a foundation in 1901, and all of those decades later up to 2001, and half of his fortune was to support purchasing of art through the National Gallery, which now holds over $2 billion worth of arts that have come from that bequest, and it will go on forever. The great thing about foundations is that you invest the money and it's the income each year that is distributed in order to be able to purchase things or to support community
groups.
That's
fantastic. Yeah. That's so good.
Yes, that's right. It's a huge power. And so people, you're asking the question about, you know, how people or families can think about having that sort of thing that's going to go on forever. They're in perpetuity. So I think now about my responsibility and my privilege to chair the Margaret Lawrence Bequest Foundation, which is an $8 million fund, as I say, and the distribution, that in 100 years' time from now, what people are doing together, and this is not me, I mean, I'm making decisions about where it ultimately goes, but it's only because of the people in the communities and what they're doing that reflects what the foundation's about. It's not going to work unless the community are involved. And in this one, in the Yarra Valley, there's so many volunteers and there's so many artists and there's so much excitement and the strategy is really strong. And so I think I see this period of time now, I think about it in decades ahead. See, well, after I will have gone. But that investment at least is being founded and seeded, and there's no reason, there's no absolute commitment to how much will continue to go, but as long as the community keeps supporting it, and there are some, you know, it can't all be philanthropy, it has to be There have to be sales of local people's arts. There have to be corporate sponsors, all of those sorts of
things.
It
has to show that it's sustainable.
As well, that's right.
As well on its own.
Yeah.
But in some ways, just listening to what you're saying, Jan, it also relates to, we talked about off air about being a master potter and how that, you think in terms of generations.
I'm not sure where that question's taking me. Can you elaborate a little bit?
Well, when we talk about, in certain areas, people will put aside materials that won't be used in their generation, but will be used in generations to come.
Well, the Japanese have a very strong tradition of that, of putting down materials, putting down clay and so forth for subsequent generations. It's not always about me or about my time. They have this respect for the past and an eye to the future, which is what this,
which is kind of,
well, is exactly what this is about. Mm. I mean, there are a couple of other important ceramic collections in Melbourne. One of them that comes to mind is the Ken Don collection. But two men who, when they died, they donated their ceramic collection as well as their house to house it as a museum, private museum, which is funded through philanthropy as well. My thing with being a master potter has always been to support not just myself and my family through the efforts of what I make, but support the greater ceramic community as well. And from the time I came to Victoria and set up my ceramic studio, the doors were open. So we would have any number of people working there in a part and full-time capacity, all of which was funded by my wife and I. So we charged people nothing to work in that studio, and at times we had up to five people working full-time in that studio, and they were all graduates of Monash or RMIT or Bendigo or Ballarat School of Mines, those sorts of facilities. And we were like a safety net after they graduated to show them how to actually make work, refine their techniques, teach them where markets might exist and things like that. And that's what we did.
Well, one of the things I know is when you do higher education in the arts, it's often like getting your driver's license, I think. Mm. And then you've got to get out and drive the car. And so something like that obviously would be giving that support.
It does. I mean, it's a multi-layered thing. I think it comes about through generosity of people like Margaret Lawrence, philanthropic organisations, industry that has some interest. And I mean, the ceramic industry is the largest industry on the whole planet. And people don't realise that it's huge. It's monstrous. You think of all the high tech engines, they're ceramic. You think of all of the piles in your bathrooms, it's on your floors. All the crockery, all the cutlery, it's an enormous industry.
Mm. Yeah. And it crosses over, it's so accessible in a sense, because you can purchase a beautiful little piece for $100, through to, well, in the current exhibition, to $2,300, but then they'll go, they're amazing. Some of the artists that Ted was telling me the other day about, Pippin Drysdale, for example, who is in Margaret's collection and in the exhibition. She's currently Australia's best known living and almost successful, I think you said, Ted, living
Absolutely.
Sort of ceramicist and decorator of ceramics. And Margaret has four little pieces of hers, but she's also now producing, huge pieces, and she's in England and exhibiting all over the world. But you get down to the local level and people can support the arts through purchasing small pieces, even if they don't have the means to build up a whole collection. But the work that that Ted and Anne do, and other people who are, becoming collectors in a bigger way, they're like the Medicis, of the Renaissance. They're sort of supporting artists and art in particular areas that they have an interest in. It might be ceramics, it might be painting, it might be sculpture, it might be, any number of things. But it is about having a passion and sharing. And so I think those who can in any way, whether you sort of share your time and your skill as a volunteer In whatever you're interested in helping with, whether it's the homeless or whether it's an art gallery or whatever it is, and a little bit of your money in terms of buying things, if you can, these are important community values, and really help build social cohesion of any community. And so, you know, this is just a part of what can happen.
It's whatever you can do to support one another with time and resources, yeah, basically, so that we can all grow.
It's a shift. I mean, there was a shift. I remember of a very good friend in Melbourne who has a superlative collection of all sorts of art, painting, netsuke, Japanese lacquer and so forth. But we talked about now and about when they were youngsters. You know, they were a couple that loved art, and they acquired art by putting down small amounts of money under the agreement with the gallery, and they would pay something off over 5 or 6, 10 months, but at the end of that period, that piece was theirs. Now we see people buy things with finance, and they're paying these damn things off forever under very high interest rates, and it's not working.
Mm.
It's a different way of... People want things now. In the past, people were prepared to wait.
It's a little bit of a different mentality, isn't it? And I think spending time with, well, speaking, getting to know artists, maybe could be a way of shifting that from like a, you know, having something instantly to recognizing that good things take time.
They do
take time.
Yeah. Mm. Thinking in longer term.
You're listening to Yarra Valley FM 99.1. Jan, tell us again about the exhibition Vessels at Yarva.
Thank you, Cora. Well, Yarva Gallery and Arts Hub, which is at 252 Maroondah Highway, Hillsville, upstairs at the pedestrian crossing. So the exhibition is open now. It's been on for a week, and it runs until the 1st of December. And the gallery is open from Wednesday to Sunday, every week from 11 until 5. And so we have 4 Yarra Valley artists, ceramicists, in the exhibition, which includes Alastair White and Lynn McDowell and Laura Windmill and, of course, Ted Seckham. And we'd be, you know, delighted to see as many Yarra Valley people and other visitors as possible during that time. Of course, on Saturday, I'll hand over to you.
On Saturday, Ted, you're coming in to do a demonstration.
I am coming in to do a demonstration, so I'm bringing my potter's wheel and some clay in, and we're going to be sitting amongst all those beautiful pots and making pots, so you'll be able to come and witness just how these things are formed and made. One of the things about this exhibition's called The Vessel is that vessel means that they hold something, and what these objects hold, not only do they have this beautiful exterior, but they hold space. So every time something new is made in the world in a three-dimensional form, it's occupying space. So I think it needs to do that in a very good way, rather than just occupying space for the sake of it. I'm a fanatic about making beautiful objects, so, and I, over 40 years, I think I've developed those skills. It's that old... Well, there's this common thinking around that it takes 10,000 hours to become a master of, pardon me, a master of something, which is, to me, is complete nonsense. I think it's more like 30,000 to get started.
Yeah. Oh, wow. Mm. That's
amazing.
That's amazing to get started.
I noticed in myself, in my own practice, when I passed 20 years of making, and my making was intense, you know, I was moving amounts of clay that were unprecedented in Australia at the time. And I thought, after 20 years, I thought, I'm finally starting to learn how to do this.
Mm-hmm.
And then after 30 years, I said, now I'm a conductor. I can make this clay sing.
So wonderful. So you can come and see Ted make some clay sing on Saturday at 2 p.m. at Yarva. Thank you so much for coming on Art Journal today. It's been a complete pleasure.
Thank you so much.